Hi everyone, it is Monday the 20th of May and it is the eve of the first paper this summer, paper one. So in honour of that, I thought I'd do a last minute podcast on one case study that I think might come up, which is on coasts, coastal management and particularly Eastbourne. So let's get cracking.
Yay!
So my first question to you is, can you name all the different types of hard engineering and the types of soft engineering? Can you define the definition? Can you define the difference between hard and soft engineering? You should be able to do that. You should also be able to identify some of the key pros and the key cons to each of those types of engineering strategies. Chances are, I think if this comes up in the exam as a kind of general coastal management strategy question, they might well give you a table of data, you know, cost of this, cost of that, and then ask you to make some kind of decision. They might do that, but you also might get a question, what is a gabion? Identify one disadvantage of using gabions. You must be prepared for those 1 and 2 mark answers. So the hard engineering types you need to know are rock armour, also known as riprap, seawall, groins, gabions. I'd say they're the 4 key ones that I would remind you of. And then on the soft engineering side, we've got dune regeneration, rebuilding sand dunes, which acts as a natural barrier to the power of the waves. We've got beach nourishment and then reprofiling, reshaping the beach so it looks like a beach. And then finally, managed retreat, which is basically do nothing and run away. So they're the key types of engineering that you need to know. And I would, when revising it, think about which ones are effective, which ones are less effective and why. How does their effectiveness compare against their cost, which is really expensive, which is really cheap. And which ones are environmentally sound and which ones are environmentally damaging. Okay. Can you link these two processes as well? So with groins, for instance, can you explain how groins interrupt the natural process of longshore drift? Where possible, that's really, really important. So what we're going to look at in the rest of this podcast is which ones were deployed at Eastbourne and the kind of key aspects of that case study you need to know. First thing we need to look at is, why did Eastbourne need a coastal management strategy? I think there are 5 key points you can make. Number one, Eastbourne's population has increased. It's very attractive to the elderly and is a major retirement town and many people have moved there. So its population has increased. Number two, most of Eastbourne is very low-lying. There's one large area in particular called the Pevensey Marshes. And increasingly, houses are being built on those low-lying areas, some of which are less than a metre above sea level, and that puts them at risk of coastal flooding. Number three, this is a global issue, but it affects Eastbourne as well. Rising sea levels in the next 80 years predict a rise of potentially up to 0.8 or even beyond that, 0.8 metres. If that happens, then those low-lying areas are going to be flooded. So a coastal defence strategy is needed. Number four, the existing defences, the groins and the seawall, had decayed and degraded and were basically falling apart. The seawall had been undercut by waves and was collapsing forward. The groins were missing large slats of wood and were rotting through. A lot of the beach shingle had been moved down the coast through longshore drift. And then finally, the tipping point was number five. They had major storms in 1987. 1987 was the great storm that affected the whole country. But also in 1989, there was a particularly bad storm as well, which caused flooding and damage to the seafront. So there are 5 key reasons why Eastbourne needed coastal management. Second part of the case study that you need to know is, what did they do? What did they do about it? If they needed a coastal management strategy, what did they do? There are 4 key things that you should talk about. Number one, they built 94 groins out of a hardwood that doesn't rot very easily, replacing the old groins. Number two, they used a dredging boat to dredge, i.e. excavate shingle from deep under the sea in the English Channel, and they pumped it, they sprayed it onto the beaches to nourish them with shingle. Over 1 million tons of shingle were added to the beaches at Eastbourne, and then bulldozers used shaped that to create the beach that is there today. Number three, they repaired the seawall. This was known as seawall encasing. They basically pumped more concrete and added more steel to the structure to repair it and keep it upright and in full working order. And then number four, they put in place rock armour at particularly vulnerable points along the coast. All of that cost £30 million, and it was paid by the government through their branch known as DEFRA, D-E-F-R-A. Following that, that happened in the 1990s and finished in 1999. Since then, effectively, they've been maintaining those defences with a budget of just over £100,000 a year. Covering all of this is one large plan. They are legally required to have what's known as a shoreline management plan. And Eastbourne's shoreline management plan is very simply to hold the line of the coast, to not allow the coastline to come back inland and to not extend the coast out, but just to hold the line. And all those strategies we've just talked about are ways in which they're doing that. The final component of the Eastbourne case study is really a discussion over whether or not this was a success, whether their strategy is working, and whether there's any conflict and between who that might be a conflict between. Overall, I think the safest way forward is to argue that it was a success. There are a lot of positives. The first and foremost was it was a well-run project that delivered an attractive seafront. It secured houses and properties from damage along the seafront, and so house prices have since risen or continue to rise. And it has done things like reducing the insurance costs for people who live there. Most residents in Eastbourne, and I have good friends who live there, are happy that the council, alongside the national government, have funded these improvements, even if it does mean a slightly higher cost to the taxpayer. There's also been a long-term gain in terms of continued tourism to Eastbourne. It's a very popular tourist location. So that is also seen as a key benefit, a key reason why this project was a success. To counter all of that, I think you have to question whether or not the shingle mining, the shingle dredging in the middle of the English Channel hasn't entirely destroyed one area of the seabed. There are concerns that that is incredibly damaging, and we don't truly know the environmental cost of that. Although it is limited to a very, very small area and is strictly controlled by government licensing. We mentioned the cost to the taxpayer, but for me and you, your parents, the cost is negligible. We barely even notice it. There was also some short-term disruption. So large sections of the beach were entirely closed off, as were the seafront, for a large number of months, even years in some cases. And that caused problems for local people. But they kind of grinned and bared it, knowing that there would be long-term benefits. I think one of the key things to note is that further along the coast to the east are the seaside towns of Bexhill and the famous settlement of Hastings, where the famous Battle of Hastings happened. Now, because of the groins built at Eastbourne, that stopped shingle moving down the coast and has cut off the supply of beach sediment to Bexhill and to Hastings. So they have also subsequently had to spend a lot of money on building up their beaches and trying to protect their coastline as well. So just to summarise, I mean, you could get any number of questions on this. It could be, describe the strategies used in a coastal management town that a coastal town that you have studied. It could be describe some of the strategies used and explain how those strategies work. I think a harder question, and maybe one that you could practice just briefly or putting a plan together for, would be evaluate the effectiveness of a UK coastal management strategy you've studied. And I think when you're talking about effectiveness and evaluating whether or not Eastbourne's been a success, you have to talk about it from different people's viewpoints. Think about it from the local business owner, the local resident, the tourist who visits Eastbourne, the environmentalist who's maybe concerned about what's happening in the English Channel. What about residents of Bexhill and Hastings further down the coast that have been affected? You know, what about the businesses that got the contract to do all the work on the beach and the people that work for those businesses and the jobs that they got? So whenever you're talking about effectiveness and evaluating that project, I really think that the stakeholders are really, really key. And ultimately, when you come back to it, has it been effective or not? Well, since 1999, when the works were finally completed, Eastbourne has not had any kind of significant coastal erosion or coastal flooding because their defences are holding up and they're working well. So from that point of view, a conclusion, I think, would be that it's effective. But in your answer, you've got to, and we've drilled this into you for the last 3 years, we've got to use that PEA structure. You want at least two paragraphs supporting your conclusion and one paragraph roughly sort of counter-arguing that and showing the other side of the coin. Okay, good luck. I will see you all tomorrow for a quick revision crash course. We've got a couple of things that we're looking forward to doing, including mitigation and adaptation of climate change. We're going to look at Nepal and Chile. We're going to do some ecosystem stuff as well. So it's going to be not too much revision. We're mindful you've just come out of a maths exam and we want to get you tuned into geography before the exam. So come along. We look forward to seeing you then. But just to say, very, very excited on the eve of paper one. Cannot wait to find out what's in it. I'm really excited for you. It's your chance to show the examiners, show us all how much you've learned in 3 years, which is a huge amount. So if I don't see you tomorrow and I don't get the chance to say individually good luck, I wish you every success in the paper. Okay, take care. Bye.